Six Music. From 12:30, the Six Music Jukebox. Right now, it's a Six Music documentary.
I'm Roger Daltrey, and this is Race with the Devil, the story of one of the great rock and rollers, Gene Vincent.
Well, let an evil lie, so what do you say? But I'll hide from the devil on judgment day. I say, I'm a little fire, I'm an old man. I'm a little fire, I'm an old man. I'm a little fire, I'm an old man down the line. Oh, yeah.
Guns, knives, drink, drugs, women, pain from a crippled leg, tragic accidents in motorbikes and cars, Gene Vincent's life contained all the elements of rock and roll legend. It seems he was often a difficult man to get to know, and once you did get to know him, he wasn't easy to be with. Mean, moody, dressed in black leather, he wasn't afraid of sorting people out with his fists, and not just men either. But how does that square with the polite, gentle, mildly spoken man who chatted amiably to interviewers, fans, musicians, barmen, in fact, anyone he met along the way on the endless tours that took up most of his short life? This is Gene talking to DJ Red Robinson.
Well, backstage at the Georgia Auditorium is the man that got here early. One of the very few acts that ever gets into Vancouver early. Gene Vincent, how are you?
Just fine, sir. How are you?
Very good. You're looking quite good. How was the ride up? Kind of a drag?
It was. It was raining all the way, you know.
It's the question we always ask. Did you have any trouble at the border?
Sure did. I stayed there about 2 hours.
2 hours, eh?
Yes, sir.
Hey, your record Dance to the Bop and The Other Side, I Got It on Capitol, is doing real fine in the Northwest here.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, when did you record that?
Same time as A Lot of Loving. Do you mind if I call you Red?
Yeah, it'd be better. Look, I don't want to call you, sir.
When I was with him, Gene was a very polite, fun person.
Dickie Harrell, drummer with Gene's original band, The Blue Caps.
A lot of personality as far as on the stage talking with the fans.
Gene never took drugs that I know of except for the drugs that the doctor would give him.
One of Gene's clapper boys, Tommy Bubba Fassenda, dancer, hand clapper, and backing vocalist.
Now, he never drank when we were with him except sociably. Maybe a drink here and there. So we didn't see Gene ever take drugs and drink. And that's what got him. I mean, Gene never took street drugs like cocaine or heroin and none of that. But he did take pain for his leg. And you were not supposed to drink with him. But then he would start drinking, and that's how his problem came about.
We'll dance, dance, dance. If not dance, dance, dance. We'll dance, dance, dance.
A lot of the southern rock and roll stars, they are very down-to-earth people. They're not stuck up at all.
Producer and label boss, Rockin' Ronnie Wiser.
True to his heritage, Gene Vincent was a real southern gentleman and a very kind person. So, you know, he treated you just like anybody else. I mean, like you were one of his friends.
My love said to me, she said a true love you'll be. For the wild, wild rivers flow, to bring back the rose of love.
From an album called Forever Gene Vincent, released in 1980, 9 years after his death, The Rose of Love was one of four unaccompanied tracks recorded by Rockin' Ronnie Wiser the month before Gene died. The contrast with his hard rocking numbers like Race with the Devil, Blue Gene Bop, Woman Love, and his biggest hit, Bebopalula, is obvious. And it's a contrast that will seem to highlight the almost schizoid personality of Gene Vincent. Gene the Gentleman and Gene the Devil. Robert Plant puts it rather well.
Gene Vincent was as embittered as some of his songs would come across, and as also, in other moods, as sweet as his songs would imply, you know?
And today, I must go for the wild.
This is biographer John Collis.
He was very awkward to work with, could be very moody, but at the same time, you find so many people who say he was great, he was very polite, and if you watch a film of him on tour, he's very much the sort of yes ma'am, no sir, typical American. So he could be a very humble, polite man, but obviously he was, you know, Jekyll and Hyde.
But I have to say, if sometimes us performers get a bit awkward and hot under the collar under the media spotlight, we do deserve some sympathy. I mean, in my career, how many times can I answer, don't you wish you had died before you got old? This is Gene with a rather abrasive BBC interviewer in October 1971, the month of his death.
Well, the road is rocky, but it won't be rocky long.
Now, I remember you 10 years ago playing with Jerry Lee Lewis at the Fairfields Hall, and a young gentleman with blonde peroxide hair called Heinz. You remember Heinz?
Right.
What happened? He was booed off the stage. He was terrible.
You say he was terrible. Now, listen, anybody who gets up on stage and who's even on the bill in the first place is not terrible. And I stand to say to you that that's not true.
You mean that no performance can be bad? Surely that can't be true.
Well, to you it might be bad. To me it might be good.
Well, I'm just saying the majority of the
people
there
that night. Yes, but who are you to judge anybody's music?
Who do you think you are? I have paid to get in.
Right, and you can also get your money on the way out.
No, once I'm in, I'm going to stay there for the duration of the performance, and if I think a man is bad, I think I'm entitled to hiss or boo if I want to, or clap if I think he's good.
But who is bad? Who are you to say what's bad or is good? You're no judge of music. You don't read it, you don't talk it, or you don't live it. I do. Now, politically, business-wise, husband-wise, I might be a no-good son of a gun. But there's one thing I can do. I know my music. Can't mess me up on it, baby.
Woman love, hey, 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 woman love, hey, 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 woman love, hey, 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 woman love, hey, 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 hey. Well, I went to Margaret Doctor not so long ago, walking in the circle, I'm all alone. He looked at me and said, good Lord above, son, you need a vaccination over.
Woman Love, the B-side of Gene Vincent's first big hit single, Bebopalula, the song that launched his career way back in 1956. Gene had started writing songs the year before whilst confined to a naval hospital bed in Portsmouth, Virginia.
Blue moon, blue moon, blue moon, keep shining bright. Blue moon, keep on shining bright. You're gonna bring me back on my baby tonight. Blue moon, keep shining bright.
Gene would no doubt have heard Elvis on the radio, and he did perform in Norfolk, Virginia, Gene's birthplace, in September 1955. Presley had his local hits the year before with numbers like That's All Right and Blue Moon of Kentucky. Gene would also have been listening to the big hits from black artists like Chuck Berry and Little Richard, Fats Domino.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain.
In 1954, America officially had recovered financially from the war. It took obviously a bit more time over here because we suffered a bit more. In 1955, there was this explosion of black artists getting into the charts for the first time. Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, Little Richard. Gene Vincent was one of the first white artists to come in on the back of that and benefit from it. And it really was the discovery of the teenager, I think. There were no teenagers before that because they could only exist as an economic force. And suddenly there was this new section of the population with spending power, the teenager. And Chuck Berry was the first to realize that they could be written for and there was money to be made here. But Gene was very close behind in the next year, 1956, and developed the idea of a band, a small group rather than a big band. Like Little Richard had a big band, Fats Domino had a big band. Gene had this unit which became the norm, classically in the Beatles, bass, drums and two guitars. Really, he and Buddy Holly were the pioneers of the classic rock lineup.
Chuck Berry was born in St. Louis, Missouri, home to a thriving music scene. Little Richard and Fats Domino were from the Deep South, and so was white rock and roller Jerry Lee Lewis. But Norfolk, Virginia was better known for its massive naval base than its musical heritage. Today it's home to rappers Timbaland and Missy Elliott. But how and why did Gene get noticed back in 1955? John Collis.
It was really the rise to prominence of Elvis Presley that led other record companies to look for their own Elvis. And Gene had been going into the local radio station and making a general nuisance of himself. And he was Capitol's Elvis, in a way. And, of course, the first record, Bebopalula, just took off.
Well, Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby.
Bebopalula. A song written by Gene and fellow serviceman Donald Graves, a guy in the bed next to Gene in the Portsmouth Hospital. The song, though, is credited to Gene and Sheriff Tex Davis, who was one of the DJs at the local radio station, WCMS. This is Gene's sister, Tina Craddock.
It was both of them. They got together, the guy in the other bed, and Gene would come up with something and say, "Now I can't get the next word. I can't get the next word. What? And the guy would come up with the word. And then after everything happened, Sheriff Tex Davis got in touch with the guy and bought his rights to the song for $25.
How it came to be recorded and how Gene got his first big break is not totally straightforward, as is the case with nearly all of these tales. Tina again.
WCMS was having a promotion, and if you wrote a song and sent it in and they accepted it, then you got a record deal with Capitol Records. Mama went down to the hospital and told him, "Son, this is something you can do." And he said, "I don't know what to write about." And she picked a comic book up off the floor and she said, "Here, write about that." And it was Little Lulu. So he did Bebopalula.
This is Gene in conversation with Red Robinson.
Capitol was holding a big contest, and they had 250 entrants. And I was one of the last ones to send mine in. And out of the 250 entrants, there was 243 that were singing Elvis Presley songs. And the song I sent in was named Bebopalula.
In fact, Gene's first big break was as a regular performer on WCMS. And he got it by just turning up and singing. Sheriff Tex, or Bill Davis, then helped him cut a demo to send to Capitol A&R man Ken Nelson. The demo included Bebopalula, Race with the Devil, and I Sure Miss You.
You took away my lovely dream, but I'm not dreams at all. You took away the kisses that I love.
Drummer Dickie Harrell, who was responsible for the Blue Cap name.
They had a talent show. It was called Country Showtime, and they would let all these people get up there, and they would do their thing, and every week they had like a little prize or whatever, and if you won, you kept coming back and all that. And so Sheriff Davis come up there. He said, "We got a young man that's in the Navy." He come up on the elevator, and I'll never forget it. He had his leg in the cast. He had two crutches, and he had on a baby blue shirt and a pair of pants. Real nice, real nice, real humble and everything. So we got to talking, and he did one of Elvis' songs. And when he left, Bill said, "What do you think?" I said, "Well, we're trying." I said, "Give everybody a chance." So that night, we went down there and set up, and He come over there, and Bills went out there and introduced him. He said, we got a local boy here from staying here at the hospital. So let's give a great big local welcome for Eugene Craddock. So he got out there and did one song, and they went crazy, man. I'm gonna tell you, because that was the thing in those days, you know, something different. And Gene was different. His style was different. His singing was different. And Bill Davis coming there one day, and he said, I think I'm gonna get with Ken Nelson, who was a good friend of Bill Davis at that time, a guy from Capitol Records. So they got together, and we went to the studio over there at WCMS, and we made this dub for Ken Nelson. And I think it was Bebopalula, and I don't remember what the other one was, but it was nothing like the record that we made. This thing had a steel guitar on it, and it was real slow. So we made it and sent it away, and we didn't hear nothing for, well, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. So one night, Gene come out there, and he sang, man, they kept calling him back, and Bill walked out there, Sheriff. He said, just a little added note, he said, got a call today from Ken Nelson at Capitol Records, and he wants to record Gene. He says he feels like there's some potential there. Well, they went crazy when they heard that. So after it was all over, I kept bugging him. I says, what's the story, man? What's the story? He said, well, we're going to get a session together. And that's when we picked up on the Blue Cap. See, we had Willie Williams and Jack Neal and Cliff Gallup and myself.
The damaged leg Dickie mentioned is, of course, the reason why Gene was in the Portsmouth Naval Hospital. He had joined the service in February 1952, much to his mother's distress, as the Korean War was still raging at the time. Gene saw no action, and in fact managed to get a transfer to a ship that spent more time in port, so he could spend more time with the girls and his big new Triumph motorbike. In July 1955, though, there came the accident that was to blight his whole life and cause him unceasing pain. Tina Craddock.
There was a four-way stop. He stopped, and a car stopped. He started to go across. She hit him. And she got out of the car and begged him, please don't call the police, sir. I have no insurance. You know, please don't. He didn't. And 10 years later, she sued him because he didn't report an accident. Everybody always wanted money from Gene. He gave her $10,000 and just paid her off. Somebody help me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Somebody help me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Somebody please help me. I saw him in pain. I saw him, honey, I wish I did just die right now. This hurts so bad. And he was a young man.
For various reasons, Gene struggled with the pain in his leg, but never had it amputated.
Gene was taken to the Veterans Hospital, and they wanted to take the leg off because it was crushed. When Mother said no, they put it back the best they could, and from then on, it just went from bad to worse. He'd go into the hospital and tell them, take it off. And every single time, I mean, it was awful, that doctors would convince him they have this new medication that's going to cure this. He would go through all the process, and then at the end they'd say it didn't work. We're going to have to take the leg off. And by then, he didn't have the mindset anymore.
Blue Cap Tommy Fassenda.
He told me, Tommy, I wouldn't let him take my leg off because I'm not a fish or I'm not a crab. And once it's gone, it won't grow back. It's gone forever. And I will always be known as an invalid. But as long as I got it, if it's on a brace, if it's on a cast, I still feel whole. But his pain was really bad. And this is how Gene got hooked on alcohol and painkiller. Somebody please help me.
Of course, once you're taking anything to numb the senses on a regular basis, you're going to need more and more of it for it to work. This is orchestra leader Ray McVeigh, who played tenor sax with one of Gene's British backing bands, the Beat Boys.
Weep for me.
Sometime he would come out, well, he could hardly stand, you know. When you get into his room to say, hey, all right, whatever it was, there's like a half bottle of sort of Jack Daniels sort of lying there, you know, and he was sort of be drinking that. It's powerful stuff, you know.
Why do your branches hang so low?
Weeping Willow, a song probably written by Gene and recorded at an EMI session in London, May 1960, with the Norrie Paramore Orchestra. When he was Shane Fenton and the Fentones, Alvin Stardust toured with Gene.
We were doing Sunday concerts, and he wasn't well. He was in a lot of pain, and he was definitely must have been on some painkillers, and he might have been taking blues or something to just keep himself going, really, because it was hard work travelling and doing gigs. But he was drinking a lot. And one night he went on, he was so wobbly, he fell off into the pit. I remember, I think it was Blackpool. Everyone was in the wings as Gene went on to see if he was going to be all right. But the tour manager was quite confident. He'd been with him all the time, except when the tour manager went to the loo in the hotel room, and Gene must have raided the bar, put these bottles of vodka in his crutch that he used to use to walk around with. And when he went on stage, we thought, he's absolutely legless. The tour manager said, no, he can't be. And then his crutch fell on the floor, and we heard this crash tinkle. And liquid was coming out the end of the thing. We took the rubber stuff off the bottom, found all these little miniature vodka bottles and things, stuffed up the crutch, so he was desperately drinking. I cried. I seriously was that sad.
One of Gene's daughters, Sherry, was only a baby when her father was living in Streatham with her mum, Marjorie, Gene's second wife. It's from her mother that she's heard tales of her somewhat wayward father.
When you examine the people that were in his life, how many of those were really looking out for him, the person? You know, they would actually feed him the bottles of scotch and stuff in order to be in his pocket or to be the groupie, or because, in fact, if you did care about him, you would have been doing the opposite. And, in fact, I know a lot of it has been said of Don Arden, what a difficult man and a violent man and stuff he was, but my mother has always spoken very positively of Don Arden and said that he was the one person that gave Gene the opportunity and put structure in his life. And for the very short time that he was married to my mother and lived in England, he lived a proper family life, although it was all rather short-lived because, again, you know, my father would take to the bottle. And there's a story of my mum cleaning up one day after, I think, a bit of a domestic, and found all kind of scotch bottles like behind the cooker and in drawers, all the things that you would expect of an alcoholic.
Crazy times we'll have for you and me, I promise. Crazy times we'll have for you and me, yeah, honey. Crazy times we'll have secretly.
Typically, the alcohol abuse led to violence. Eric Burden.
I remember when I went to a Gene Vincent show in the UK, and he had a backup band, one of Brian Epstein's project bands from Liverpool, and the drummer was a big guy. And by that time, he and Gene were around in each other's faces, you know. And he walked by Gene Vincent's dressing room and just jumped up and kicked the door in of Gene's dressing room and then took off running. Gene had been sitting, combing his hair, and he whipped out I think it was a Derringer, small pistol, and he fell backwards over the chair and rolled onto his feet into a kind of a FBI stance and fired off a couple of rounds that lodged in the wall. When the smoke cleared, thank God nobody was injured, and it was all a big laugh, you know, but it could have been dangerous stuff.
Eric wasn't the only one to witness Gene's fascination with guns. This is one of the Shadows, Chet Harris.
Oh, Gene was a very funny guy, actually. He pulled a gun on me once, you know. He was loaded, too. I was in the dressing room with Johnny Layton and me. And we were sharing the dressing room, Gene, Johnny Layton and I. And we were combing our hair in the mirror or something, Johnny and I, and all I heard behind me was Harris. I turned and there's Gene with a 45.
Ray McVeigh was never himself threatened, but was always aware of the contents of Gene's bag.
Yeah, he had a knife in there. And a gun, he had a gun and a knife. Seemed to be a very insecure man about his whereabouts and what he's going to be doing and who's looking over his shoulder.
Eric Burdon's diagnosis of Gene's state of mind may seem a bit harsh, but I suppose he has a point.
I would say that he was suffering from constant psychosis, you know, due to huge amounts of alcohol. We all dabbled in black bombers and little blue pills up as I'm sure they were readily available for Gene to get his hands on. And you mix that with fame, it can do really strange things to your head. And the press wanted anything to write about, well, it hasn't changed, has it? I mean, it's still the same today. The more stoned you are, the more out of control you are, the more fights you get into, the more press you get.
Lay that pistol down, baby. Lay that pistol down. A pistol packing mama. Lay that pistol down.
Pistol packing mama. Another of the tracks Gene recorded at that EMI session in 1960, with Norrie Paramore as producer and Ray McVeigh on tenor and baritone sax.
Six.
Music.
What makes a writer?
Is someone who can't help but be a writer.
Someone who is simple and honest and writes about what they're interested in.
Desperately wanting to get an idea across. I think you have to be very passionate, otherwise it's not worth doing. A bit like music.
Six Music presents the series Paperback Writers.
Featuring David Nichols, Mark Billingham, Oliver Jeffers and myself, Ian Banks.
Join us as we put down our pens and play the music that makes us who we are. From the Smiths to Johnny Cash.
Billy Bragg to Aretha Franklin.
From Elvis Presley to Elvis Perkins.
Joan Osborne to Kevin Ayers. You can listen to the entire series of Paperback Writers right now at the Six Music website.
BBC Radio.
Six. Music. Six Music.
From 4 a.m, the live music hour. At 3, Six Music documentaries. Right now, it's the Six Music Jukebox.